speechless infant in the home. No, out into this world, tiny little thing before its time in a godfor what? Girl, yes, tiny little girl, into this, out into this, before her time, godforsaken hole called. No matter, parents unknown, unheard of, he having vanished, thin air, no sooner buttoned up his breeches. She similarly, 8 months later, almost at the tick, so no love, spared that. No love such as normally vented on the speechless infant in the home. No, nor indeed for that matter, any of any kind. No love of any kind, at any subsequent stage. So, typical affair, nothing of any note till coming up to 60 when, what, 70? God! Coming up to 70 when, wandering in a field, looking aimlessly for cowslips to make a ball. A few steps then stop, stare into space, then on, a few more, stop. And stare again, so on, drifting around, when suddenly, gradually, all went out, all that early April morning light, and she found herself in the... What? Who? No! She! Found herself in the dark, and if not exactly insentient, for she could still hear the buzzing, so-called, in the ears. And a ray of light came and went, such as the moon might cast, drifting in and out of cloud. But so dulled, feeling so dulled, she did not know what position she was in. Imagine what position she was in, whether standing or sitting. But the brae, what? Kneeling, yes. Whether standing or sitting or kneeling. But the brae, what? Lying, yes. Whether standing or sitting or kneeling or lying. But the brain still, in a way, for her first thought was, oh, long after, sudden flash, brought up as she'd been to believe with the other waves in the merciful God. Her first thought was, oh, long after, sudden flash, she was being punished for her sins, a number of which then, further proofy proof were needed, flashed through her mind, one after the other, then dismissed as foolish, or long after, this thought's dismissed, as she suddenly realized, gradually realized, she was not suffering. Imagine, not suffering. Indeed, could not remember offhand when she had suffered less. Unless, of course, she was meant to be suffering. Ha! Thought to be suffering. Just as the odd time in her life, when clearly intended to be having pleasure, she was in fact having none, not the slightest. In which case, of course, that notion of punishment for some sin or other, or for the lot, or no particular reason, for its own sake, thing she understood perfectly, that notion of punishment which first occurred to her, brought up as she'd been to believe, with the other waifs, in a merciful God, first occurred to her, then dismissed as foolish, was perhaps not so foolish after all. So on, all that, vain reasonings. Till this other thought, oh, long after, sudden flash, very foolish, really, but what, the buzzing, yes, all the time the buzzing, so-called, in the ears, though, of course, actually, not in the ears at all, in the skull, dull raw in the skull, and all the time this ray or beam, like moonbeam, but probably not, certainly not, always the same spot, now bright, now shrouded, but always the same spot, as no moon could, no moon, just all part of the same wish to torment. So actually, in point of fact, not in the least, not a twinge, so far. This other thought then, oh, long after, sudden flash, very foolish really, but so like her, in a way, that she might do well to groan on and off, writhe, she could not, as if in actual agony, but could not bring herself, some flaw in her makeup, incapable of deceit, or the machine, more like to the machine, so disconnected, never got the message, or powerless to respond, like numbed, couldn't make the sound, not any sound, no sound of any kind, no screaming for help, for example, should she feel so inclined, scream, ah, and listen, scream again. Ah! Then listen again. No, spared that. All silent as the grave. No part. What? The buzzing, yes, all silent, but for the buzzing, so-called. No part of her moving that she could feel. Just the eyelids, presumably. On and off, shut out the light. Reflex, they call it. No feeling of any kind. But the lids, even best of times. Who feels them? Opening, shutting, all that moisture. But the brain still sufficiently, oh, very much so, at this stage, in control, under control, to question even this. For on that April morning, so it reasoned, that April morning, she, fixing with her eye a distant bell, as she hastened towards it, fixing it with her eye, lest it elude her, had not all gone out, all that light of itself, without any, on her part, so on it reasoned, vain questionings, and all dead still, sweet silent as the grave, when suddenly, gradually, she'll realise, what? The buzzing, yes, all dead still, but for the buzzing, so-called, when suddenly she realised, words were what? Who? No! She! Realised, words were coming, imagine, words were coming, A voice she did not recognize at first, so long since it had sounded, then finally had to admit could be none other than her own. Certain vowel sounds she'd never heard elsewhere, so that people would stare. The rare occasions, once or twice a year, always winter some strange reason, stare at her uncomprehending. And now this dream, she who had never, on the contrary, practically speechless all her days, how she survived. Even shopping, out shopping, busy shopping center, supermarket. Just hand in the list with the bag, old black shopping bag, then stand there waiting, any length of time, middle of the throng, motionless, staring into space, mouth half open as usual, till it was back in her hand, the bag back in her hand, then pay and go, not as much as goodbye, how she survived. And now this dream, not catching the half of it, not the quarter, no idea.
The pulsations of the air, once set in motion by the human voice, cease not to exist with the sounds to which they gave rise. But if the air we breathe is the never-failing historian of the sentiments we have uttered, earth, air, and ocean are the eternal witnesses of the acts we have done. The same principle of the equality of action and reaction applies to them. Whatever moment is communicated to any of their particles is transmitted to all around it. The track of every canoe, of every vessel which has yet disturbed the surface of the ocean, whether impelled by manual force or elemental power, remains forever registered in the future movement of all succeeding particles which may occupy its place. The furrow which is left is, indeed, instantly filled up by the closing waters, but they draw after them other and larger portions of the surrounding element, and these again, once moved, communicate motion to others in endless succession. Welcome to Tongue in Cheek.
An aspirated voice is a voiceless sound with a strong puff of air, or an H sound afterwards, as in an English p, k, t, when these sounds occur at the beginning of a word. It is the air we shape with our vocal cords.
We're going to start today with two parts of a three-part exercise that we call furrow. And these three exercises together, what we're going to be focusing on is the extension of breath and the body as it emanates into environments. So the first thing I want us to do is, what you'll need for this, you can be sitting at a desk, you can be sitting on a couch. Ideally, you can keep your torso upright and your diaphragm loose. And I want you to find, I guess before you position yourself, it would be good to find a napkin or some kind of loose piece of paper. If it's an actual leaf of paper, then you want to make sure it's nice and floppy, that you're not creasing it down the middle and making it rigid. And with that piece of paper, just hold it up about 8 inches from your mouth. And this first part, we're gonna be focusing on the power of our breath and the power of our voiceless voice. So just what you're gonna first do is a sound. And elongating that, so kind of WH. And leave that paper in front of your face, again, about 8 inches from your face. And make that sound. And watch how the paper or the napkin flutters forward. Now that you have that, start to move your hand with the napkin away from your face, trying to maintain the amount that the piece of paper or the napkin is being deflected. So increasing the power of your breath and the length of your breath. as you're bringing it away. See if you can get the full extent of your arm. Without the napkin or the piece of paper falling back down. What's the limit of the distance of that breath, of that voiceless sound? Now take a little break. Bring your napkin back to
standing.
The center. Yeah, standing. 8 inches again from the front of your mouth. And now let's switch to voiced breath. So we're going to repeat the same action, trying to maintain the flutter at various distances. But instead of doing one long, we're going to change it to a k. And that k, you're going to see, you're going to have to repeat over again. So you're going to say k, k, k. So actually the napkin or the piece of paper is going to be fluttering, right? So let's just start at 8 inches. Now move to 12 and try to get that same deflection. Move to 20. Just a slight bend in your arm, in your elbow. What happens to the sound as you try to force more air out? Now bring it back to 8.
Definitely notice how the direction of it, of your breath, is really important in this. Which way you're angling the breath.
Back to 20. You should hear a change from a coo to a kind of cue as you're trying to tighten the passage to maintain the force further away.
It's like a remote drumming.
Okay. And let's try to do that again with pa. So again at 8 inches.
Pa.
Pa. Pa. Pa. Pa. Pa. Pa. And then back to 20. Total reaching of your arm. Back to 8. Thank you.
So what you were just listening to is actually a snapping shrimp or pistol shrimp. And they are using a specialized claw to cavitate water. They move it faster than the speed of sound, and it creates a cavity in the water, and it's a bubble that rapidly implodes and creates a pop and a snap, and they can use it to communicate with each other, but it's mostly used as a weapon that can stun and kill nearby prey or attackers. But it also makes a very loud noise.
The second part of our exercise today is, instead of focusing on power, we're going to be thinking about the direction of our phonemes. So thinking about some of the phonemes we went over yesterday, we're going to walk through a couple and try to feel actually what direction of air is coming out of our mouth when we enunciate them. So the first thing we should do is, instead of putting a napkin in front of our mouth, take your hand and place it vertically in line with your face so that the palm of your hand is kind of near cupping, cupping your mouth. And your fingers start just around your nose. And the first sound I want you to make is an F. What is that, Aaron, an F?
That would be labiodental.
Right, labiodental. So you actually feel the your top teeth resting on your bottom lip, right? Maybe you do it a different way. But think about where the air is coming out of your mouth and where it's landing on your hand. What do you feel, Emma?
Well, I feel that I can brush the air
towards
the top, towards the fingertips, as well as towards the wrist, depending on how the lips are angled.
It's like as the as you shift your teeth relative to your lower lip, it can direct the F, but as your teeth come back, it kind of turns into a V.
Like if I say fantasy, maybe I get fantasy on the bottom part of my palm. But if I say
fruit,
I get a little higher, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's like as you try to project your voice to a different part of your hand, it can changes the quality of the F, and you use a different voice to get, to create a different sound to get your voice to a different part of your hand.
So it's a funny way of thinking how to speak.
Yeah.
Okay, let's change to ka, 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 ka,
ka,
ka, ka, ka, ka, ka,
ka,
ka,
ka,
ka,
ka,
ka,
ka,
ka,
ka.
So that's maybe a little less like a kind of window squeegee up and down your hand. And it's maybe more of a wash down.
Ka.
Or cha, cha.
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 Ka.
Cha.
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 Ka.
Ka.
Cha.
Cha. Cha.
Cha.
Ka.
Cha. Cha.
Ka.
And now a two.
So two is a little bit of a rounded sound. You round the front of your mouth to create the
two. And that's maybe going to just where your fingertips start if you have it. Your palms still aligned in front of your mouth.
It's very reverberant.
Two.
Yeah.
And E. What you might see with E is it's almost like you don't get anything on your hand, right?
Yeah.
E.
E.
So that's a lateral, is that right?
Yes.
A lateral, like L?
Yes.
E.
I can't remember.
No, maybe I'm wrong.
I'm not sure.
is a lateral, is it not?
Mm-mm. Is it?
I think so.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a lateral.
Just
air passing over the top of the tongue.
And if you do ing, 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 like sing, ing, ing, you might realize ing.
Ing.
Now take one of maybe your other hand or that hand and just close your nose at the same time as saying ing. Ing.
Ing.
Ing.
Ing.
Ing.
Ing.
Ing. So you realize actually all that air is coming out of your nose. It's one of the reasons you're maybe not feeling it on your hand.
Yeah, it's just resonating in your nose, just buzzing around in there.
Okay, a few more. Q. Q, Q,
Q,
Q,
Q,
Q,
Q,
Q,
Q,
Q,
Q,
Q,
Q,
Q. It's almost like taking your breath is taking a dive down.
Yes.
Q,
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 Q. Definitely moves. It moves on my hand when I go through the sound.
Q,
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 S, S,
Q,
bet that's great over the radio.
Q.
Q. And switching to Z's instead of S's. Z. Z. Maybe that's more on your teeth.
Thank you. The shell is a telephone reaching the scale of the earth. So we're about to play with and play through a selection of shells. Some of them have been converted into instruments, and others are as they would have been made by mollusks. We have three queen conch shells, one 19th century samurai trumpet used by a sect of warrior monks in rural Japan to communicate across mountains. It has an orange silk tassel.
Should we sound these as we go through them?
Yes, good idea.
Yes.
So Timmy's about to sound the samurai trumpet.
I'm the worst at this one. Oh, there you go.
Should take the tassel out of the shell.
Something there.
There are many ways to angle it.
Can I give it a try?
Now Aaron is going to give it a try.
Which is what?
Which is... This is the samurai trumpet. Now that's vibrating the whole room.
Yeah, it is.
If only you could hear this. Feel this.
Feel
this. You can hear this.
Where's our contact mic?
If you kind of hum into it, it's sort of like a analog auto-tune that sort of favors these different pitches, and your voice kind of slides into them. I was playing with a little bit earlier, and I noticed that.
Can you try again?
And that's me just trying to, like, slowly raise and lower my pitch. It falls into these, not sure what the sonic term would be, but... It's interesting. Yeah, it's like there's this almost like a feedback of what's being played into the shell pressure-wise that affects your vocal cords in some way.
A trumpet in monotone. We also have two mini conch horns. One has a mouthpiece, and the other just had its...
What do you call that part of the shell? Is there a name for it? Like the very end of the spire?
Yeah, well, it's the...
Spire, actually. It's called the spire.
Yeah.
So the top spire is cut off, so there's a hole to the middle, right?
Yes.
I trust Emma to know the name of the shell. Let me try playing this one. I'm holding a smaller shell with the top cut off of the spire.
Another time.
It doesn't really have like a trumpet tip or anything, so I'm just making my voice through it.
Right.
Trying to talk through it.
We can speculate that these were the first, some of the earliest instruments.
Yeah.
And some of the earliest ears, right? Artificial ears.
Yes, doppelganger ears, as the ethnographer Stefan Helmreich has called them. But they let us in to thinking, to imagining the deep time of resonance production. And so...
Emma, what's the anatomical term again for the shell that these... animals are born with? It's like a proto shell.
Proto conch.
Yeah, proto conch. It's and it's right at the tip of the spire, I believe.
Right.
Right.
So the tip or the spire is the oldest, the originating point.
Yeah, weird.
And the shell continues to be built to be secreted throughout the organism's lifetime.
So when you're making a musical instrument, you're just chopping off the oldest bit. letting yourself in the beginning of time. I mean, I think it's amazing that when you have them reeds or not, or the samurai trumpet, that they really become, I mean, through our episodes, we've sort of gone from the sounding of the breath just by the movement of the body to the shaping of sound with our mouths and with our vocal cords, to then the direction of voice. And here it's almost like it's our tertiary or our fourth mouth that's actually kind of extending off of, or we wouldn't say mouth, or like our fourth voicing system.
Right.
That is another, I mean, I think for all of us, like, voice is really coming from the movement of the body.
Yeah.
And it's a product of the movement of the body.
Yeah. Incidental to these contingent movements and relationships of different parts of your anatomy. And it's not so, you know, sort of thinking of it at that, it's thinking of it that way, it's not so bizarre to consider putting a shell to your mouth as this strange extension of those relationships, and a continued shaping of breath that forms a new voice as it, you know, goes out into the environment and becomes a further voice.
Another kind of channeling exercise.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting to think that both breath and the sounds that it make are shaped not just inside the body, but that they go out into an environment and are shaped and shape.
I mean, this is literally going through somebody else's building, right? If we're going through a shell.
Yes, the body house. A body becoming.
Yeah.
An exoskeleton.
And it's interesting, these, I keep thinking of these
mics. A very chic gown.
It's a poetic way to put it. Yeah, I keep thinking of these mics almost as like a prosthesis between the audible sonic spectrum and then the inaudible electromagnetic spectrum. These sort mm-hmm. of...
conduits.
Yeah, these sort of like... strange. Yeah, it's probably the best way to put it. Yeah, just like a conduit to extend our voice and our bodies across space.
Shall we keep going?
Yeah, let's play with some more shells.
Okay. I think we're each taking hold of a conch, which has not been altered in any way. Just to give you an idea of how...
Yeah, this one's huge.
The voice filters through. You to do this at home. And now, on to the next section.
To protect himself from sirens, Ulysses stopped his ears with wax and had himself bound to the mast of his ship. Naturally, any and every traveler before him could have done the same, except those whom the sirens allured even from a great distance. But it was known to all the world that such things were of no help whatever. The song of the sirens could pierce through everything, and the longing of those they seduced would have broken far stronger bonds than chains and masts. Now the sirens have a still more fatal weapon than their song, namely their silence. And though admittedly such a thing has never happened, still it is conceivable that someone might possibly have escaped from their singing. But from their silence, certainly never. Mm-hmm. But Ulysses, if one may so express it, did not hear their silence. He thought they were singing, and that he alone did not hear them. If the sirens had possessed consciousness, they would have been annihilated at that moment. But they remained as they had been. All that had happened was that Ulysses had escaped them. So what sounded like music earlier that we were just playing is actually the Arecibo message. And it's a sonic translation of the zeros and ones of that message put into sound by Professor Erhard Behrens, FU Berlin. The Arecibo message was beamed via frequency-modulated radio waves into space at a ceremony to mark the remodeling of the Arecibo radio telescope on the 16th of November, 1974. Dr. Frank Drake, then at Cornell University and creator of the famous Drake equation, wrote the message with help from Carl Sagan, among others, and it contains basic information about humans, including the structure of our DNA, our carbon-based nature, and what we look like.
Exercise 3, body resonance. So let's go back to that Z sound. So with that, I want you to find a surface, if you're near a table, would be best. And with that Z sound, and the vibrations that you feel translating to your jaw, I want you to put your head on the surface of a table. Place your forehead first down on the table and make that sound. Now shift from your forehead resting on it over to your cheek. Try to get the bony part of your cheek down on the table and repeat that sound. Now try to reshape your jaw, loosening from the Z of the teeth into a sound that you feel will make that surface resonate. And you can do as Aaron is doing now, shifting from his cheek to his chin. Just start to roll your head along the surface of the table, looking for the ideal form of resonance.
It helps if you press your bone as hard as possible into the surface. It helps conduct the sound a little bit better.
Again. And opening your mouth. Now, if you have a friend nearby or somebody nearby, or you can do it with your own hand, take a hand, maybe a friend's hand, and place it with the back side of your hand along that surface so that the nails of your hand are resting on that hard surface. And now do the same. Try to find that one place and that one sound, that one position of your face and that one position of your mouth to resonate that surface.
And if you can't feel much transmitting through the surface, try different pitches, because different materials and different surfaces will resonate with different frequencies.
Yeah. see if you feel it rattling on the backs of your fingers. Great.
There it.
Harmony.
It did.
THX.
Okay, now let's switch over to a standing position. We're gonna start to do this on a vertical surface. So stand if you can, and approach a wall of some kind. And as you walk to that wall, first press your forehead against the wall, letting your nose gently touch the wall and aligning your feet with the base of the wall. And like before with the surface of the table, shift your wrists so that the backs of your hands and your fingernails are resting lightly against the wall. Now start again with that Z. Now shift to your cheek again, to the hard side of your cheek, placing also your knees gently against the wall. And lifting your arms to a more horizontal position parallel with the floor. Think about hugging the wall with the backs of your hands. And again, look for that pitch that you find resonance with the backs of your fingers. If you have a friend nearby, try to find their resonance. Now step back from the wall. Now step back from the wall and just press the hard part of your forehead, or sorry, not your forehead, the top of your head. If you have a hair clip, it's probably a good idea to move it. Press that hard part of the top of your head against the wall, and really now I want you to search for the resonance of that surface. Place your fingertips against the wall and see if you can find when it starts to undulate and shiver. Shifting pitch to find that point of resonant frequency. Yeah.
On the planet Mars, explorers are searching the desert for traces of extinct life. One day they enter a valley between jagged cliffs very different from the worn-down landscapes that run the length and breadth of the sand planet. And they encounter the echo. I heard a voice, or rather the murmur of a million voices, the uproar of a whole people speaking incredible, incomprehensible words. The sound hit us in successive swirling waves. In this valley of echoes are gathered the sounds of a million people. It is the only spot in the universe where the fossils are not minerals, but masses of sound. One of the explorers, keen to savor the pleasure of his discovery, steps forward ill-advisedly, and the voice fades away gently to a deathly silence. For his body was a screen. He was too heavy, too material, for the airy voices to bear the contact.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on.
You've heard Ground Samuel Beckett, Not I, Tom. Performed by Billy Whitelaw, 1973.
Charles Babbage, The Ninth Bridgewater Treatise, from 1838.
Jana Winderin, The Noisiest Guys on the Planet, 2015.
Pauline Oliveros, Horse Sings from Cloud, 1982.
Nabil Ahmed, Sound and Chaos, from 2015.
Franz Kafka, The Silence of the Sirens, 1931.
Arecibo Radio Telescope, Arecibo Message, 1974.
Gerard Klein, La Vallée des Echos.
David Bowie, Space Oddity, 1969.
And we'd like to credit all the mollusk-made structures known as shells. A shout out to the mollusk spirits. Thank you all for listening to Tongue in Cheek. We will be back.
For here am I sitting in a tin can.